Rachel Druck, what's the relationship between loving and giving?
When you give, you will
love. Okay, so, right, so the sort of maybe counterintuitive or counter-American, you know, of a certain kind piece here is, right, we like to say something like, I mean, I don't think we put it this crudely, but like, I give to the people I love, and I don't give to the people I don't care about. And Rav Dessler comes along and does this really interesting inversion and says, the only reason you don't care about them is because you've never given to them. That's the sort of, like, flip they try to make out of human consciousness. And here, you know, it's a kind of really interesting universalizing impulse that he has. I don't know how universalizing, but universalizing, I mean expanding the circle of our concern, right? It's not enough to just love the people you already love, right? One is supposed to be working on growing one's capacity for love. And the sentence, which is actually kind of amazing, I don't know if everyone got to it, some people have spent a lot of time on three. Look at the second paragraph of chapter 5 in the Hebrew, and it's source 4 in the source 4. And it's the second paragraph of the Hebrew. Is it the second paragraph of the English too? You'll tell me in a second. He says, "Achi bonena ha'adam," a person should look closely. "Kila asher yiten yohav," to the one you give, you love. Not, and it's striking here, is not l'asher yohav yitain, because, and here, by the way, I think there's a kind of, this is the ethical critique. If all you do is give to the people you already love, you're actually not doing anything all that demanding. Right? So he says, no, ki l'asher yitain yohav, v'gam yelo chelek bo, v'yidbak elav. All these phrases would be interesting to sort of struggle with exactly what he means by them. You will have a part in that person, and you will cleave to them. Ka'amur, as I already said, you know, in the section before, source 3 that we looked at. Va'az yavchin v'yavin ki ze asher zar nechshav lo hu rak masher terem natan lo. The one who he thinks of as utterly other, right, is only because he's never been generous to him before. And has never given him anything. If you actually do kindness to everyone you meet, you will realize, or you will come to feel, that everyone is an intimate of yours in some way. Everyone is beloved by you. In every one of them you have a part. And then I want to, in a minute, come back to this phrase, v'chulam hispashta'at mito. How does Carmel render that? In all of them, some aspect of yourself has been...
My being has extended into all of them.
My being has extended into all of them. Okay. So I want to talk about that phrase in a minute. But first, just a couple of thoughts from people. Like, what do you make of this? What's your sort of response? I don't even want to ask a question. I just want to open the floor. Yeah, Tamar.
It makes me think of some psychological experiments that I've heard about that I forget exactly how it's posed, but like, who do people feel more loyal to? Who do people feel better about? Or who are people more likely to do favors for? A person that they've done a favor for, or a person who's done a favor for them? And it's always the person you've already done a favor for. It's like actually the one who you feel better about than
right.
You've already given to them. So I think that there's like a psychological truth here, as well as the moral claim that he's making.
Yeah, you know, a cruder way of saying what you said is, although, you know, it's a cognitive dissonance theory of the good. Right? If you do the good enough times, eventually you'll actually come to have positive feelings for the person you're giving to also. The reason why I don't like that language of cognitive dissonance here is because the primary work that Rav Dessler is interested in is not cognitive at all. It's almost kind of emotional dissonance, right? In other words, he wants you to feel concern and love for the person, not to think positive thoughts about them, or not only. But I think you're right. There is a kind of... Right. I mean, it's almost like, you know, Rav Dessler comes along and says, I'm interested in the cognitive behavior therapy version of Torah, right? How do you work? You make a decision to act in a particular way, and that transforms consciousness in some way, right? As opposed to, first I'm going to go deep into the wells of my psyche, engage in some 27-year psychodynamic process, and then maybe I might be ready to give. I mean, I'm playing, obviously, but I mean, he's doing something here that's in some ways strangely contemporary, right? How do you learn to love? Well, act in a loving way. Yeah, please, Benji.
I find it difficult to imagine loving everyone, and it's
right.
And I, especially if that involves giving, you know, I kind of, because giving of myself is often what I feel when I have a relationship, I guess, and to give of yourself in so many different directions seems potentially like a route to complete madness. And
right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So what? Good. So there's two questions, I think, that emerge from that, which is A, what does he actually mean? And B, what would you, as a kind of incorporator of his ideas, want us to mean by it? Because I think my sense is we all probably have some sense that there's something very insightful and important here. And yet Benjamin comes along and says, and yet. Which I think probably many people too. Let's have people who didn't say it. Ilana, yeah. And then Alex.
I think it has to be within reasonable and healthy limits. But the thing, reading this, I actually felt a little bit sad. And the reason I felt sad was that I think that this feels so foreign to our society. Like, I don't think that this is written to the individual, but within a social or communal context. Right? He didn't say it to one student. Presumably he said it to, like, the 200 sitting in front of him. You know, and I feel like even if I totally internalize this and try to do it, it could be a route to madness or imbalance. Because there's an infinite amount of need, you know, in the world. But I think that if you were in a community and this was a communal goal, if it was, you know, a communal norm that this is the way to behave, it would really transform the community and the people within it. I think, but to me, the harder question is, how do you find or create that kind of community or system within this larger American context where this feels quite foreign?
So if I could take what you said and what Benji said, and maybe tie them together for a second, or try to, I think there's actually kind of an interesting response that Rav Dessler might make to Benji's critique. I'm not sure about this, but that he might make, which is, yes, I understand you're going to ask me the question of what happens when I'm so endlessly generous that I end up with the potential of loving everyone and in some ways just dissolving in the process. And I have a feeling Rav Dessler would say something like, you know what? You give me a call when you're close. meaning, would that we had that problem, right? I'm talking about, right, that most of us have a circle of love and concern that is simply too small, and I want to expand it. Now, you want to come along and say, okay, but what's the, you know, when does it become unhealthy? You know what? Okay. Why don't you give me a list of everyone in your life you know who has lost any emotional well-being because they're so utterly generous that they have no self left. Now, by the way, that's actually not an answer to the question. It's a prod that says, yeah, let's not get lost in the, even though I personally find that question really interesting, but I think Rav Dessler would say that has the potential to function as a kind of deflection from the fact is that we should be pushing. I think he would say that, right? Don't let the sort of like theory of the self deflect you from the fundamental task I've put before you. And the truth that I, Rav Dessler, believe I've articulated, which is that love grows from giving and not just giving growing from love. So, yeah. Alex, and then we'll push forward because we're going to run out of time very soon.
Yeah, I think that this goes with what Lana was saying. Sort of like the narrative we have in contemporary society, you know, love someone, you give to them. But I guess I was like wondering what type of love he's talking about, what type of giving he's talking about.
Right.
If it's romantic love or fraternal love or just both and giving, if it's physical giving, if it's emotional giving, or both. And in our tri-rooted discussion, we sort of like ended up thinking about opening up as giving, giving people a part of yourself that you've guarded, telling them a secret or making yourself emotionally vulnerable.
Right.
And that's something I think that you know, in some ways is understood, in some ways isn't understood by our culture. Like that part of, we were talking before about the whiskey ad or whatever, like not being able to say thank you. But then there is this sort of strand of our culture that like what you need to do in a relationship really is make yourself vulnerable and open up, and that is a type of giving that can, like, make any sort of relationship, either friend or romantic, from, like, one level to the next, you know, from, like, an acquaintanceship or whatever to, like, the true love.
Right. So, I mean, there's, Alex, there's a lot in what you said, and I'm just going to let it sit because I think it's all really interesting stuff. I mean, I'll say, you know, I think that the book on the range of what Jewish sources have meant by the term love remains to be written, right? Meaning, I think that that's like a really interesting and important question. If I ever retire from here, something I would actually be interested in trying to take on. Like, first of all, what is the relationship between? What does it mean when the Torah says love your neighbor, right? I mean, what does it mean when the Torah says love the stranger? More stuff has been written about what the Torah means when it says love the Lord your God, but even there's a lot to say. And what kind of love, how emotive is the love that's being spoken of here? And how much is making oneself vulnerable language that Rav Dessler would resonate with or find oddly American in some way, right? Right? I'm talking about giving and you're talking about making yourself vulnerable. I don't know, you know, I resonate with what you're saying. I wonder whether he would. I'm just not sure. I mean, he was, after all, part British. Sorry, that was just for Benji's entertainment. Now, I wanted to just point something out to you for a second, if you will bear with me. This could be a very complex discussion that I'm not totally sure that I'm qualified to have, even though I think it's worth noting. Okay? Rav Dessler says, if you look at source 3, he says it there, and he says it again in source 4. In source 3, he says, right, that a person tends to love that which he has made. In that, Behar Gishol Asher Chelek Min Atzmiyuto Bahemu. In that, he or she feels like some part of themselves is in the one to whom he has given. And then again, he'll say that later. You know, as we just saw, V'chulam hitpashta atzmuto, his self is in some way in the other. And I'm going to say this in a weird shorthand, and then I'll explain what I mean, and maybe people can sort of talk about this, you know, over lunch or some other time, which I think is just worth thinking about. It has occurred to me on a couple of occasions to write an article trying to show the way in which I think Rav Dessler is articulating here what I will call an anti-Levinasian ethic. Right? Because Levinas and people like him, right, in some ways are all about the otherness of the other. Right? Alterity in the language of trendy philosophy, right? It's all about otherness. And Rav Dessler is a more, you might say, modern as opposed to postmodern ethical theorist, basically says, on some level, it's actually about sameness. It's about actually recognizing the ways in which you and the other are in some fundamental way the same thing, made from the same, that person is you and you are it. As he says, I think I translated that, included that in the translation that you got, the Ve'atel Re'echa Kamocha, right? Kamocha meaning, right, you in some way are the same thing, and in giving you become in some way one. Now, what I don't want to do, because we don't have the time, is like go into great length here, analyzing these two possible ways of thinking about ethical obligation. I don't know, and I'm going to leave this as a sort of question, I don't know whether Rav Dessler, right, reading someone like Levinas would have said, and we'll find that appealing even theoretically, or whether he said, that's interesting theoretically, but you know what traction that has in the reality of human life? Zero. And I'm actually trying to articulate an ethic that some people might actually be able to inhabit. I don't know which one of those two things he would have said. But I think it's really interesting. It's one of these things where it's worth noting. You know, on the one hand, when Rav Dessler says, you know, yourself is in the other person, there's a way to read him as saying something sort of narcissistic, which is, oh, then I'm still loving myself. But I think what he has in mind, given the sort of overall thrust of what we've been seeing here, is that there's some way in which some commonality between us has been created, and that creates obligations and emotional connections.
Yeah, okay. Exactly 6 minutes. Jana, if you can keep this comment to 45 seconds or less, you're on.
Okay. Put it to Square, Levinas, and Dessler.
Yeah.
Dessler, sorry. Couldn't you say that for Rob Dessler's theory to work, you actually need to begin with a concept of alterity in order to invest in what eventually becomes this sameness, that like you come from this original position of the other, and then from that place in giving and in this sort of like upheaval of the give love, love give direction that he deals with, you're actually incorporating Levinas's own idea into the ethic.
I would say, you know, Tzarich Iyun, both in the context of Rav Dessler and in the context of Levinas, yeah, let alone in the attempt to bring them together. I just think it's, I just wanted to point out at least that there's two very different ways of imagining what an obligation to someone who I previously had no relationship with might look like. You might want to argue that eventually those things merge in some way. I'm not sure. Tzarich Iyun, not in the sense that I think it's probably wrong. Tzarich Iyun is in, I literally think Tzarich Iyun. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me just, since we're running out of time, I hope you'll take the time to look at sources 7 and 8. We won't do it here today. But what they do, sources 7 and 8, I'm sorry, I actually meant sources 6 and 7, the Hebrew source 6, and I need to get you a translation of that. I'm sorry, I don't exactly know what happened here. The Hebrew source 6 and 7 really kind of make the transition where, if you're wondering, you know, why I thought this was a continuation of our shiur on gratitude last time, right? The argument is that hakarat hatov, a sense of gratitude, is only really possible for one whose orientation is to be a notain, not a notail. Which is sort of obvious in a way, but it's interesting how long he takes setting that up, right? Because by definition, a notail is one who believes, I have it coming to me. So is incapable on some level of feeling grateful, right? I would even go so far as to say that if you ask for a Dessler, he would say a real notail is kofer ba'ikar, right? A real notail is ultimately a total heretic because he or she is incapable of a sense of God has given me anything at all that didn't belong to me. It all belongs to me, right? In other words, let's put it in American sort of philosophical idiom, right? Gratitude is precluded by a sense of entitlement. And the notail is ultimately governed by a sense of entitlement. Acquisitiveness and entitlement, on some level, he thinks go together. It would be interesting for us to think about that together, whether we think that's exactly right. But I think for him, that's right. Acquisitiveness and entitlement are so interwoven that unless my position is one of giving, I'm unlikely to ever feel gratitude. And then, of course, the transition is, right, that hakarat hatov, gratitude, is actually what makes possible avodat Hashem, right? Which is where what we saw already in some way, implicit maybe in the Rambam, explicit in Heschel, explicit in Rabbeinu Bachya, although we didn't really see that. But here you have the sense that gratitude becomes the basis of what it means to serve God, because otherwise I have no sense of having been a recipient. And there's no possibility of reciprocity, which is what it means to live a life of relationship with God. Now, the last thing he says, and I include this from a different essay, source H, is from a different section of Mikhtav Me'eliyahu. It's not the same contrast, it's a kind of continuation from later. He just says something that I thought was interesting, which is, he says, right, some people think that faith is what makes possible a sense of gratitude to God. But actually, he says, the opposite is the case, right? A fundamental orientation of gratitude is the only thing that makes possible belief. And there's a lot to say about that, a lot to think about there, but I thought it was an interesting extension that he comes back to, some of what he does with the relationship between giving and love. He makes kind of parallel move between gratitude
and faith. That if you, trying to think about exactly how to flesh this logic out for a second, if you wait till you believe before you feel grateful, you'll never make that move somehow. That somehow, or maybe another way of saying this, I'm really sort of, you know, struggling here to figure out, A, what he's saying, and B, what I'm trying to sort of draw out a little bit, is that the path to genuine faith is founded in gratitude. And I don't know if he would say it's the only path, but it's a pretty fundamental path, right? You can't... It actually makes belief not an abstract philosophical question, but actually a kind of orientation. It's a consequence of my orientation. Because I'm able to feel grateful, I'm able to believe. Right? So if he were kind of playing with William James, he would say the problem is not, right, a will to believe, the problem is we have no will to be grateful, which is the prerequisite for what would make faith possible. Heschel famously says in God in Search of Man, what we lack is not a will to believe, but a will to wonder, because he thinks that wonder is something I can choose to have, whereas belief, I can do things that make it more likely that I'll believe, but I can't just decide to believe. And in a way, although in a much less sort of philosophic kind of... Anyway, I wonder whether Rav Dessler has something similar in mind, right? No. How do you believe? Many of us have had the experience about different things, right? Okay, I'm going to believe this now. Right? It's like, it doesn't work. And so the question is, what do you do to sort of cultivate the possibility of belief? By the way, it's probably even true about having faith in another person, trusting another person. Might even be true there. I'm not sure. I mean, it's things to think about. But here he seems to be interested in what posture makes belief more possible or plausible. You know, in the history of Western philosophy, there's like a whole ongoing discussion about whether faith is fundamentally a volitional category or not. Right? Meaning, is it a function of my will? As only a philosopher would say, one philosopher in this context coins the term to volit, which is to decide to believe. And is that actually something that a human being can do? Can I wake up one day and say, now I believe in God? And if not, right, the immediate question is, well, what can I do to make it more likely? And in a way, Heschel's wonder and maybe Rav Dessler's gratitude are partially responses to that, although I don't think that's all they are. Okay. Any closing? Anybody want to share any closing word of... Yes, Shoshi.
I think that... This is just me talking, but I think that in order to be grateful, one has to be able to receive. That's all.
I think you would, if you actually read, if anybody wants, yeah, it's in number six, and it's more there even than the stuff I marked off. He's very interested in precisely that question, and again, it's going to make the chiluk, the distinction for him between receiving and taking is very, very important, right? Mekabel is not the same thing as no tail. I think it's very, very important. He's not talking about a non-relational self. So I'm about a non-acquisitive, non-chotef self, non-grabbing self. Okay. Seems like appropriate way to end by saying thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.